Started.
This is someone's phone.
Is the recording okay?
Yes, the recording is on.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Hi, my name's Stephanie and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I'm going to be presenting, Bryce and I are going to be presenting the chapter We Agnostic, Step 2. So Step 2 has two parts to it. So I'll be presenting the first part and then Bryce will be presenting the second part. And so I just want to share a little bit about myself, and I don't have a lot of time, so let me just get my clock right here. Okay, so anyway, I want to let everyone know that when I was young, I was raised Catholic, and then later on during my, I want to say middle school, teenage years, I kind of converted over to Christianity, and during that time is when I started drinking and doing other things. And so for me, I think at age 19, I came to AA once. And other than that, I always tried to go to church to relieve my problem with alcohol. And so my experience early on was doing that. I was trying to use spiritual means, a lot like Dr. Bob, to cure this internal condition, you know. And for some reason, I couldn't quite get connected. You know, I would go to church, and for a little while, I could be sober, and I would get a job. I'd feel like I was doing well. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, like Robert was talking about, I'd find that I'd have a drink in my hand. You know, and then once I had this drink, I would oftentimes say to myself, well, I might as well keep drinking, you know, I've already messed up. And the other thing, too, is like I'm going to church and I wanted to be like those people in church. I really wanted to dedicate my life to God and give my life to God, but I couldn't stop sinning. You know, and so I felt like I could never measure up, and I like God didn't want to have anything to do with me. But the funny thing is, when I came into this group, the Primary Purpose Group, 12 years ago, almost 13 years ago now, I think, or almost 12, I had been in Alcoholics Anonymous for a very long time. And I had been doing the same thing. I felt as though I had outgrown Alcoholics Anonymous and I needed to find a spiritual experience. So my life was getting worse and worse because I was suffering from untreated alcoholism. I was in the rooms of AA and I didn't have a spiritual solution. Although if you asked me, I would tell you that I believed in God and that I absolutely loved God. The funny thing is, though, when we look at this chapter, We Agnostics, I never really felt like I needed to read it prior to coming to this group, right? Because I was like, this isn't me. I believe in God. But at the end of step one, looking at that unmanageability exercise and being faced with alcoholic destruction, so really knowing that if I continue on the way I'm going, I'm going to die. Whether that be in a sober state or with booze, you know? Because for me, even if I'm not drinking, if I'm sober and I stay sober long enough without a spiritual solution, I'm going to blow my head off.
That's right.
Okay, I will blow my head off. And that was the point that I was at when I came to this group.
Yes.
So now I'm looking at We Agnostics, right? And this is step two, which says, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Now, in order for me to be restored to sanity, like Jaime explains so perfectly, I have to know that I'm insane, right? I'm mentally ill. My alcoholism, I have a mental illness, sober or not. Sober or not. So I can't cure it. I tried every way to, you know, use all my willpower and all these things people say, you know, just do it for your family. You're such a good person. You have all this potential. You can do it. You're strong, right? No, none of that worked. Maybe you're going to face 2 to 5 years in prison, Stephanie. That didn't work, right? None of that worked. So I realized that I have to have some kind of spiritual experience. Well, in order to have a new spiritual experience, I had to look at all my old ideas about God. And that's what this We Agnostics helped me to do. So the first thing that it sets up here is it tells me that I'm in a dilemma, right? I've got this dilemma going on. And that I can either keep on going the way I'm going, which is being like, super crazy, super freak, super dying over here, right? Or I can accept spiritual help. Now, is that a weird thing? Like, a normal person would probably just say, I'm going to clean up and I'm going to accept spiritual help. I don't want to go to prison, you know? But why is it for someone like me who suffers from alcoholism, this is a dilemma. This is my dilemma. I got this over here, right? So I really have to be convinced. The thing is, I don't really make a choice. So you guys need a sponsor that's really going to hammer your butt in step one, take you through this book so you can understand that you're screwed, right?
Right.
So going into step two, you're getting pushed through. It's like, you know what? I don't want to go back there. Under all conditions, I cannot go back there. So God, move me forward. Now I'm going to look at my old ideas about God. And what I realized doing that is we have this little exercise that says my God idea, right? Where am I going to find this power? How am I going to find this power that I need to stay sober for good and all? Well, I need to look at these old ideas I had, the things that were kind of, you know, making me like I feel like I couldn't have a conception of God or an idea of God. And what I learned is that every idea I had about God was actually given to me by somebody else. I never sat back and contemplated my own experience with God, right? And I was so, you know, used to sitting in these churches and people telling me, you're going to hell. Look at you, you're smoking cigarettes, you're doing all these other things, sinning. If you don't stop and repent, you're done, right? And so I was convinced. I was convinced. And then what happened to me was, as I'm going through this exercise, I'm like, shit, these weird ideas came from these weird people. I'm actually worshiping people. And when I look back, you guys, I was, before I came to AA, I was living in the gutter, okay? I mean, I was a mess. And I was committing every possible sin. I hadn't murdered anybody, you know. But other than that, anything else you could have done, I was there. And I had that gaping hole inside of me. And guess what? God was there loving me, taking care of me. It's like that footprints prayer. We hear everyone say, you know, footprints. God was carrying me when I was in that darkness. And I had this revelation, shoot, I haven't even had the opportunity to experience any type of God. I've been confined to these old ideas that they teach me in church, just like, you know, like we look in the book and it says, when Columbus told people the earth was round and people are like, you're going to die, dude. It's flat. You know, it's flat. And that's how I am when it comes to religion. People impress upon me their ideas and I eat it up. And then I'm thinking, I'm a loser and I'm going to die. Well, this big book showed me freedom. So I got to go through this and it's like, hey, all I need to do to begin this process and this journey with this power so I can stay sober for good and all is to get a conception, is to be willing to believe that there is a power that can move me beyond where I'm at right in this moment. Right? Where I'm at right in this moment. And that power cannot be me. And it can't be my children. And it can't be a light bulb. And it can't be the ocean. And it can't be my husband. And it can't be my family. And it can't be a pastor. It can't be any of those. It has to be a power that flows in through me and that I can access and use.
Yes.
Right? So as I continue to go along on this path with this idea of willingness, I can actually start, okay? This is the starting point, and we call it the cornerstone. So I'll end with this. In the very beginning of the steps, we get our when we look at the circle and triangle, you know, we talk about foundation. And so foundation actually is step one. I believe that I have this craving, this obsession, and my life is completely unmanageable, even without booze. Even without booze, my life sucks because I have no medicine and I have no God, right? And then I go into step two and I get this cornerstone. The cornerstone, see, what happens is we're building this archway to walk through freedom, right? So step one is foundation. Step two is the cornerstone. And the cornerstone is my willingness to believe that there's a power that can move me beyond my old weird ideas, my old beliefs, the way I've been living, and can put me on this road to freedom, can push me into doing the rest of this work, you know? And so from this cornerstone, I can move. And I'm so grateful for this opportunity to talk about step two. In Bill's story, when you read the last part of Bill's story, it focuses on all the things Bill did to recover. And the funny thing is that Bill talks about for three pages, this is only page 9 to 16, so we're talking about six pages. Three pages he spends on step two. Three pages. Do you actually think I'm going to go to someone that's going to tell me, Stephanie, do you believe in God? You've done step two. That is not Bill's experience. I better have this kind of fervor that I'm talking about to you today and this kind of power and this kind of openness, right? I need it. So if you guys ever felt like any of us and what we're talking about up here, I hope that you find someone after this meeting and that you join us on the new road to this freedom that I'm talking about. And so that's all I have. I'll turn it over to Bryce.
Thanks, Bryce.
All right, Bryce.
No big promise. My name is Bryce. I'm a recovered alcoholic. First of all, I'd like to welcome anyone who's new to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd like to let you guys know that it's a real honor for me to have been asked to participate in this workshop. It's a real privilege to talk about the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous because this step work process changed my life. And I've never been the same. And each time I go through it, there's new freedom and new power to access. So, talking about step two, I have to look at it from this foundation that I've built in step one, right? I don't show up to step two in a good place, right? if I've had a good sponsorship and have been thorough in step one, I've been able to identify that I'm this real hopeless chronic alcoholic that this book talks about, right? And there's real desperation, right? That's my motivation to even consider that God can be a part of my life, right? Or that He has anything that He wants to do with me. You know, we all show up here with different experiences in our life with God. You know, Stephanie touched on growing up in church. You know, so there's people that come from being raised with this impression of God impressed upon them, right? And then there's the opposite side of the coin, right? There's people that come to AA that weren't raised with any idea of God, right? That God was never a part of the conversation at home, and they have no experience. What I found is that's actually a better place to be than the other way. But like Stephanie, I grew up in a religious family, and on actually my mother's and father's side, all of the family was participants in a certain sect of church. So I grew up going to church on a regular basis, and I had a lot of education impressed upon me about what God looks like, right, and how God operates in my life. So I end up this hopeless chronic alcoholic, right? And I have something to judge with, right? Why isn't God helping me, right? How come when I pray, this obsession doesn't go away, right? Because I was taught as a child that all you got to do is pray and God will come in and solve these problems. All right, that wasn't happening for me. And I continued to get worse, right? But it's really my foundation in step one, right? I have to really understand this grave nature of alcoholism, that if I'm not able to access any more power, if God's not going to come into my life and change things, I'm going to die, right? And not because this book says it or even because I sat down with a sponsor and learned about alcoholism, but because I've experienced that, right? There was a progression in my drinking that continued to get worse, right? The circumstances, the consequences around my drinking continued to progressively get worse and worse, you know? So I come to step two with this level of desperation, and what I'm hit with is that this lack of power is my dilemma. And what am I going to do about it, right? So that's where this book comes into play, right? And it's gonna give me some spiritual exercises to examine that, right? And I'm gonna be able to start laying aside prejudice. And what laying aside prejudice means is my old ideas, right? What's been taught, what I was taught about God as a child. I need to lay that stuff aside, right? Even if I come into this with a really strong belief, right? I might know a lot of scripture. I might think that my faith is really strong. But let's look at the results in my life, right?
This isn't working for you.
This isn't working, right? I'm continuing to relapse here. I'm continuing to go back to the drink, even knowing that it's going to be bad, right? You hear this description in Alcoholics Anonymous a lot of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I got to a place in my drinking that I knew the results, right? I knew what was coming when I took that first drink, right? That's like a whole nother level of fucked up, right? This is real powerlessness, right? I'm drinking against my will.
That's right.
Right? And so in step two, I come and I start to look at how my old ideas about God aren't working, right? And I need to be able to lay that aside and be open to something new, right? You know, willingness is one of the key requirements to step two. And why wouldn't I be willing, right? If I continue on without this power, right, what am I left with? I'm left with me, right? And what happens is what's described on page 52 of this book. And I'll read a little bit about it. It says, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply our human problems this same readiness to change our point of view, right? In this idea, in this question about God. It says we were having trouble with our personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. I don't know about you guys, but that was my life. All of that described. And so it says, was not a basic solution of these bedevilments. We call these the bedevilments. Aren't a basic solution more important than whether we should see news reels of lunar flight? And what they're talking about at this time when this was written in the 30s, we hadn't been to the moon yet, right? But people were talking about going to the moon, right? And so what it's referencing is, isn't this more important than seeing the future, right? And so how I was instructed to, the really most powerful part of step two for me was I was instructed by my sponsor to to do this exercise. And on this next page, on page 53, it says, we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade. Right? So I've identified this this crisis that I can't evade in step one, right? I'm real clear that I suffer from this thing and I don't have the power to do anything about it, right? And so it says we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't, right? And so in that consideration, right, looking at that, how I read it is either God is everything or I'm everything. Right? And if I'm everything, what happens? What are the results in my life? Well, the results are what's on page 52, right? These bedevilments, right? That's what's happening under Bryce's power, right? And so my sponsor had me do this 4-day exercise where I was to consider if God is nothing, what am I left with, right? So he sent me home with these bedevilments and he said, consider each one of them and consider the fact that Bryce is the ultimate authority, right? He has, I have no more help, no more power from God to get, right? And I was instructed not to pray because at this point I was engaged on some level with God, right? I did pray occasionally. And so, you know, when he told me this about this exercise and we got to this point in the book, you know, it was kind of like, oh man, that's like that's like heresy, right? I gotta consider that God isn't real. I believe God is real, right? But it was explained to me that this is going to help me get closer to this power, right? That I desperately need, right? And so I went home with that and I considered for a few days that God is nothing. And I didn't pray. I didn't think about, you know, I kind of just went about life like I normally do. and then after a few days of that, I'm to go back to this list on 52 and I'm to consider, what if God is everything, right? What if there's absolute power that I can access in my life, right? That's going to help me solve these problems with my personal relationships, right? It's going to help me control these internal emotional natures inside of me, right? That would help me get out of a place of being a prey to misery and depression, right? To help me conquer these fears, right? We were unhappy, just that. What if there's a power that can come into my life that I can be happy in sobriety, right? Because for about 8 or 9 years, coming in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not happy in sobriety, right? I was kind of always on edge a little bit. And it wasn't like I was this manic depressive type who was miserable all the time. I just had this real low level uncomfortableness in life, you know. I've been able to identify that that's this spiritual malady that is part of being a real alcoholic. And so that was a really powerful tool for me to consider, right, that God is everything, right? And he almost like has to be, like, even if right, I'm faced with what happens when I'm everything, right? I see by reflecting on my experience in life that when I'm operating out of self, shit goes bad, right? And so I'm not expected at this point in the process to have this miraculous awakening to God's existence and that this power is real, right? I'm not really feeling that yet. What I'm considering is there a possibility that God is real and that there is power for me to get, right? It's this willingness, right? The two requirements in step two are laying aside prejudice, right? Having an openness to this, forgetting about the past and what I've done with God or not done with God. And then coming to a place where I'm willing to believe, right? And so we got there. And then as we moved further into step two, it's going to start describing where and how to find this power, right? Because I don't know, right? I thought you'd just pray and, you know, there's this God in the heavens and somehow he hears it and, you know, I don't... There's billions of people on the planet. How does he hear all of them at once? You know, there's all this unknown, right? So where am I going to find it? How am I going to access it? So I became willing to believe that God is everything, and then it's going to continue to tell me where and how to find it. So I'm almost out of time, but I want to basically the requirements are that I search fearlessly, and what the book describes and tells me is that it says deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God, right? So when you look at step two in the short form, it talks about being restored, right? So I looked at that word restored. You know, if I had a 1965 Ford Mustang, right, car that I bought, and I'm going to restore it, what does that look like? Well, that means I'm going to put it back to its original condition, right? I'm going to put it back how it was created. And so it was pointed out to me that I already have, right, what I need. God's going to restore me back, right, to how I was supposed to be, to how I was created, right? And the rest of the steps are going to get me there, right? But there's this process I can continue to be a part of, and I'm gonna start learning some truth about myself. And as I learn truth about myself, God's going to disclose himself to me, right? And that's what happened for me. And with this attitude of searching fearlessly, right, and searching diligently, that's how the book describes it. It gives me this promise, and it says, with this attitude, you cannot fail, right? So it's promising me that with this open mind and this willingness and this attitude to seek and to learn about this power, to learn about myself, right, and inventory, which is coming up, I can't fail, right? I don't know about what you guys hear from that, but that's like a guarantee, right?
That's right.
And again, coming from a place of my experience as this chronic alcoholic, right, Robert touched on it, persistent and reoccurring problems in my life with alcohol and with dope, right? I lost my train of thought. Yeah, I have this guarantee, and I look back, right, with this foundation in step one to see that I had nothing close to a guarantee on my own, right? In fact, I have the flip side of the coin. If I can't find an answer here, if I can't tap into this new power, I'm guaranteed to relapse. Right? That's what my experience shows me. I'm gonna drink. Right? And when I drink, I can't stop. Right? And I got to a place where I was desperate and fortunate, really fortunate, to have qualified sponsorships in my life that was taking me through this process, right? Because like I said, I'd been around AA for many years, but I just went to meetings, right?
That's right.
And I thought, like, you know, I'm gonna hear what these people have to say, and, you know, my life's going to get better. I'm going to follow what they say. But that's something completely different than getting into this work and having a real experience, right? Robert touched on connecting the dots, you know, and seeing how this is me, right? Or this is not me, right? You know, I was approached by a sponsor that said in the first step, I'm not... concerned about you being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want you to find your truth, right? Let's look for truth. Let's see if this stuff applies to you, right? Because like Robert and Jaime shared, and Connie shared, I had no idea what it meant to be alcoholic. I knew I drank a lot, right? I knew I got strung out on opiates pretty consistently. I knew that those things in my life were inhibiting me from being successful, right? I can't hold a job. I'm stealing. I'm committing felonies. I'm getting in trouble with the law, right? But step two is really this realization and you know, being willing to try something new. You know, and it's really the start of the solution that we offer here in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Is I'm going to continue on. I'm going to seek this power because I'm powerless, right? I don't have enough power. I need more power to pull this shit off in my life.
Good job. So we had one presenter that isn't going to be with us today. So Stephanie will kick off step three, and I'll finish the second half of it.
Okay. Stephanie, alcoholic.
Stephanie, Dad.
Thank goodness he's doing the second half of step three because it's long and I get the short part. So that was so awesome, right? I mean, I just am so grateful that our home group gets to present this today, and I hope that all of you are seeing what an experience we've had with this book, with these 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it is so awesome. And I like our group, we refer to ourselves as, you know, like the low bottom people. And all of us, it took us a long time to get to that room, and I'm so grateful that we've all had this experience. So anyway, going into step three, which is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. So in step two, you know, we talked about the cornerstone and the willingness to believe. And now in step three, we're talking about a decision. But again, I can't move forward stuck in old ideas, and I have to look at, you know, do I find my life run on self-will successful? Okay? And this, actually, step three really kind of leads us right into step four. And I don't know how many of you have heard this saying in Alcoholics Anonymous, but a lot of people will say there's no must in AA, right? Well, if you read this book, you'll actually learn that there are a lot of musts. Mm-hmm. And one of the things in step three that they talk about are requirements. I feel like requirements are even stronger than musts. Because sometimes if people will say, Stephanie, you must do this, I'll think, no, I'm not. But if someone says it's a requirement, right? Like, for instance, if you want to cash your check, you're required to have an ID. Well, I want money. So I'm definitely going to have a, you know, my driver's license. I'm going to make sure that I have it, I renew it, all that, okay? A must, I don't know. If they said you must, I probably would too. But the requirement that we're talking about here in step three says, being convinced we're at step three, which is we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that? Just what do we do? So the first requirement that I'm going to talk about is that I be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. So when I first came to this group, like I said, I didn't really think that my life run on self-will, many areas of it, were not a success, although I was absolutely miserable. And then as I'm going through the work, I could see that I'm failing in many, many areas, okay? Many areas. I was losing a job. I got divorced. My kids in shambles. You know, I don't get along with my family. We're looking at those, the development exercise. I mean, my life's in the toilet, and I had about 15 years sober. But to me, I'm thinking I got time. I should be, you know, have a ton of money, be a doctor, all this. And what did I have? I was starting my life all over again, wanting to put a gun in my mouth, like I shared about in step two. So I'm looking at what this says, and how I learned to read the book is I actually have to insert myself into this book, right? So to have an experience with it, like the people before me shared, is I have to turn statements into questions. So I'm just going to read you this page, and I want you guys to kind of follow along with your own name and see if you can identify yourself. Before I do that, it says, when I am on the basis of me running my life on self-will, it says here that I'm almost always in collision with something or somebody. So when I'm running my life, I'm just colliding. And you know what? It's really true. God, when I'm in self, I'm just running around this world, man. People irritate the crap out of me. If I don't have a God in my life, I'm not turning to God. I'm just telling people off, you know. I'm nervous on the way here. I'm saying, can this effort in front of me hurry up? Man, we got to go. We got stuff to do. We got tables to set up, you know. This is not a spiritual way of life, right? This is my life run on self-will. And it says here that each person tries to live by self-propulsion. I think my motives are good. I always feel like I can, you know, offer people unsolicited advice. The problem is when they don't follow my advice, I get pissed at them. Maybe I don't want to talk to them anymore. I'm like, whatever, you deserve whatever you get. Now you should have listened to me. It's like I'm God. And then it goes on to say, each person's like an actor. So I'm an actor, and I want to run the whole show. I'm going to arrange everything, the lights, right? So this is how I start. Stephanie is an actor. She wants to run the whole show. She's forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and all the rest of her players in her own way. So this is my play. It's called The Stephanie Show. So I want to just see if anyone else can relate to that, right? If I shared this with my family, I promise you that before I went through this work, they would definitely say it was always The Stephanie Show. Probably my employers would, my friends would, anybody would. Then it goes on to say, if Stephanie's arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as Stephanie wished, the show would be great. Everything would be great if everyone could just do what I told them to do. And then it says, everyone, including me, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, Stephanie is sometimes virtuous. We, you know, do all these things nice. Hey, guys, yeah, you look great. On the other hand, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to be mean. I'm going to get irritated. I'll yell at you, belittle you, right? Talk about you, gossip about you. It says, on the other hand, okay, but as with most, so I have varied traits, though. That's what it says. So it could go either way if you're not doing what I want. What usually happens, my show doesn't come off well. I get irritated with others, right? People don't do what I want. I feel absolutely insulted, like people are stepping on my toes, okay? And then I'm surprised after I'm living a life in self, I'm surprised when people retaliate. They come, they retaliate, they get irritated with me, they don't want to be my friend anymore. Maybe this leads to divorce, poor family relations, maybe a best friend, you know, jams out or whatever. And I'm sitting here saying, whatever, man. You know, I'm a good person. I just don't even understand why I'm a victim. Why are they doing all this to me? I never deserve this, right? I'm totally deluded to the fact that I've actually placed myself in this position. I'll never see it because I'm so selfish. I'm always thinking, God, it's just like I'm just trying to run everything. Everything. And it just becomes so apparent to me reading this page. And truthfully, I'm so grateful that I've had the opportunity to read this and really be clear on what my life looks like run on self-will. And Bryce did an absolutely wonderful explanation of that. I mean, like I said, when I first came here, I was facing 2 to 5 years in prison. I had 13 counts of felony forgery and a possession charge. And I had nothing other than that, legal consequences. And then 15 years in AA, without doing any kind of work out of this book, again, I was relocating. I had no money. I had my daughter. I lost another job. I was getting ready to get fired from a job that I just got. I had no friends, and I had poor family relations, and I was getting a divorce. So one more time, my life was in the toilet, you know? And this is because my whole life, I've been trying to run things. I've been trying to run things and to run people, and over again, it fails. So it's like, how do I make this decision? How can I finally, you know, turn and make this decision to God? And what Teddy is going to do is he's going to describe beautifully how we're going to do that. But I'll just wrap up with this because it says here, when I finish reading, admitting that I may be somewhat at fault, I am sure that other people are more to blame. So as we start inventory, you know, we're really going to be looking at this. We're going to look at the stage, the scripts that I hand everybody, you know, how everyone fails me and how I blame everyone else for my circumstances, my problems, right? That has to do with everyone, not with me. And then it says, what is her basic trouble? Is she not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Is she not a victim of the delusion that she can wrestle satisfaction and happiness out of this world if she only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things she wants? And do not her actions make each of them wish to retaliate, like I shared, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is she not even in her best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? So in step three, I'm looking at Stephanie is an actor. Not only am I the actor up on the stage, right? I'm the actor. I'm the director. I'm directing the whole show. I want everyone to listen to my directions. And I'm handing everyone scripts. They're unaware of it. They don't even know what these scripts are, right? When they don't live up to it, I get irritated. And I'm producing a whole bunch of confusion. That's all I produce in my life is confusion. And so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Teddy for the second half of step three.
What page was that?
That is 61.
Yes. All right, everybody. My name's Teddy. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Teddy.
Everybody's doing an awesome job here. Yeah. Thank you guys for coming out today. And we're talking about the steps. So we're kind of pressed for time. So I want to kind of get right into where pick up where she left off at. So step three is a decision, and it's in a chapter called How It Works, and I'll pick up on page 62. We did not prep for this, so this is, we're bringing it out. And it's in a chapter called How It Works, and when I got to this fellowship, I knew a lot about how it didn't work, you know? Yeah. And I'm going to tell you, I came in here a hot mess. you know. I was on parole. I was on probation. I was going to Prop 36. I'd been in and out of treatment centers. Everything that I owned was in a duffel bag. You know, I would jump into people's backyards and take a, you know, a bath in their swimming pool. I'd pick fruit off their tree to get something to eat. You know, I'd walk around town and basically all I would do is take. On page 62, getting into step 3, it doesn't say alcohol is the root of the problem. I used to think that when I would go into treatment, they'd say alcohol is the problem. Alcohol is the problem. So I would think when you get alcohol out of the way, that my life's supposed to get better. But what I'm left with is completely unbearable. What it says here on page 62, for those of you that do have the big book, it says selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Right? It doesn't say alcohol is the root of the trouble. Right? So selfishness and self-centeredness is my problem. And what self-centeredness means is, it doesn't mean that I think too highly of myself, nor does it mean that I think too little of myself. What it means is I'm all I think about. Right? We got anybody in the room that can relate to that? Alright. I'm preaching to the choir. So I'm talking to the right people. But thank God we got a program of how it works here. You know, and when I came in here, you know, on 59 in the beginning of this chapter, it says, here are the steps we took which are suggested as a program of recovery. So, you know, I get into those groups where they tell me, hey, this program is just suggested, you know. But this is the way I'd like to make this suggested program to you. If I'm up in an airplane with you at 7,000 feet, and all of a sudden we start hurling at the ground at 7,000 miles per hour, I'm going to suggest you put on a parachute. Now, if you don't believe in parachutes, that's your business, right? But you got two options, right? Either one, you could put on the parachute and jump out the plane with me, or plan B, you can stay in that plane. It's up to you. You can lock into that old idea. Let me know how that works out for you. But you probably aren't going to be around to tell us about it, right? And so this is one of the things that I had to become. This is how we suggest this program. So I think it's important when we're reading this book that we put some context to it, because a lot of things get taken out of context. You know, if I got a life or death problem, I better have a life or, you know, a life saving solution. So one thing that we go into here, and I'm gonna refer to the book because I think it's important. Anything that can't be reconciled with what the big book's saying, please disregard it because this is my opinion. I'm here to share the program with you. So when it says selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problem, what it goes on to say is driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. I'm driven by that. Now, I experience fear today. Don't get me wrong. I experience self-pity. Sometimes I go into victim mode, right? Yeah. I experience all these self-delusions. But I'm not driven by them today. And that's a world of difference between experiencing something and being driven by something. And I'll give you a visual of what it means to be driven. How many of you guys have been in the back of a cop car? Anybody? Alright, so this is going to fit. This is going to fit just perfect. So when you're in the back of that cop car gets to drive you and take you wherever you go. Right? You're handcuffed back there. You're behind that plexiglass or whatever, and that little steel thing back there. You can't say, officer, please don't go to the county jail. Right? He's going to drive you and take you exactly where you want, where that cop car is going to go. You can't say, hey, I get out here. Right? When I'm being driven by something, I can't just get out of it on my... I can't will my way on my own power out of this thing. Right? So, and that's the way I live my life. She talked about, you know, self-will doesn't work. If you can change your life by an act of the will, I would want to bet that you guys aren't one of us. You know? I could not change the course of my existence. I was in problems, drunk or sober, that I could not walk away from on my own power. Right? I could not get out of that place on my own power. So this is what I had to say. Okay, there better be more than me here that's going to take care of this problem. Okay, so that, and the next paragraph says, so our troubles we think are basically of our own making. Ah, My troubles are of my own making. So what that means is you people out here don't need to change, because I spent a lifetime blaming you for the way my life was. Right? If I just had a different parole officer, I wouldn't go do a year flat violation. Right? Right? If she wouldn't act so much, I wouldn't be a miserable person. Right? But that's not what this is saying. This says nobody else out here needs to change in order for me to get free. Right? Let that be a statement of hope for you. The world doesn't need to change in order for your life to get better.
What?
Right?
Yeah.
Right? We've got a process here of how it works, right? That's going to be a transformational experience where you can live free and comfortable in your own skin. How you are has no bearing over me today. What you think of me does not matter. There's plenty of people that said I was either going to die or do life in prison. Contrary to popular belief, none of those things happen. Right? So you better take it up with God if that's still your belief system. But I'm believing for God. So that, like she said, there's a lot of requirements in this book. And it says, above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. Now there's another must, another requirement. We must be not rid of alcohol, but rid of selfishness. Because selfishness is the condition conducive for the obsession to drink to return. And when that drink returns and I put alcohol into my system, it's going to set off that physical reaction. And you better believe, once that physical reaction gets set off, I can't tell you when it's going to start, how bad it's going to be, and when it's going to end. It's going to take me where it wants to take me. But selfishness will be the kickstarter of that whole thing. Right? So what this basically says is that drunk or sober, I cannot live my life run on self-will. And playing God doesn't work. I need a God in my life just not to play God. Does that make sense? Because I can't stay out of playing God on my own power. Right? I mean, I'd be in the penitentiary calling my grandma collect from the penitentiary and trying to tell her what she needs to do about managing her life. Right? She's accepting my collect calls and I'm sitting there playing God on the other end of the phone. You should do this. You should do that. Then I hit her up for a package or money. You know? But this is how we play God. Right? And I can play God even today. Now it's been polished a little bit better, you know? Because I've recovered, right? The book talks about living a double life. Right? Because I could polish things up and I could get the career going up. I could get the family talking back to me again. But really something on the inside still isn't right. And I still have that need to be in control. And I want to play God and take the reins. But right? I can't reduce self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on my own power like this book talks about. The one of the main considerations in the third step is we had to have God's help. And you can move forward through the steps and you can move backwards through the steps. Because if you're at a place where you're not convinced you have to have God's help, then you're probably moving backwards through the steps. Because if you don't need God's help, maybe it isn't about step three. Maybe it's about back in step two. You don't need a power greater than yourself to restore you to sanity. And if that's not the case, maybe the problem isn't even in step two. It's back in step one. You can manage your own life and run your life on, and stay sober on your own power. So why would I need a God in my life, right? If I haven't had that internal transformational type of experience, I'm not going to be convinced of that. And what this book does is it goes in depth, deep down, and it breaks down everything about, and it strips. See, a lot of people say, what am I going to get from doing this process? It's not about what you're going to get, but what you're going to get rid of. Right? Woo-hoo. All right? So in the Bible even says something like that. Right? One of the Beatitudes is, what does it say? It says, we're poor in spirit. I got to empty the cup out so it can get filled up, right? Okay? It just depends on how you look at it. So it says, this is the how and the why of it. This is how this program works and why this program works. Okay? It says, first of all, we had to quit playing God. That's how it works. Pretty simple, right? Try it. And why it works? Because playing God didn't work, right? Because playing God didn't. If playing God worked, I wouldn't be sitting here with you all day. I'd be out there playing God. But guess what? There's only room for one of us on the throne, and it ain't me, right? So it says, next, we decided that hereafter in this realm of life, that God was going to be the director. So this is really where the third step decision is made at. Okay? And there's three aspects to this one relationship. This relationship that I'm going to decide into. Right? How many of you guys believe that step three is about turning your will and life over to the care of God? Primary purpose, don't answer that. Right? How many of you guys believe that step three is about turning your will and life over to the care of God? You? 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 How about if you got three frogs sitting on a log and two of them decide to jump off, how many frogs are left? Wrong.
Three.
What did I say? Two frogs?
Three. You said three.
Did I say three?
Three.
Oh.
Yeah. And two decided to jump off.
Okay, two decided to jump off. You got one left. Good job, you guys. No, you still got three left, right? Because they just made a decision. They did not take any action. So step three is about a decision, right? We're only deciding into this way of life, into this relationship with God, right? So what I'm going to decide in is, you know, me not being the director. Because me directing my life on my power, like Stephanie was talking about, has failed me, right? How many of you guys have failed at directing your life on your own power? Right? Are you ready to make the decision that hereafter in this realm of life, that God will be your director? Right? And you're going to be the actor. Right? See, I got to know my role here. And then the next part of that consideration is the principal-agent relationship. Right? If Michael Jordan hires an agent to go out and represent who he'd have him be, right? What does that agent need to do? He needs to go out and represent exactly what Michael Jordan wants him to do, right? He's not the one filtering down, or the agent isn't the one filtering down the directions. See, I spent a long time trying to be the principal. I wanted to tell you what goods I was going to move. I just moved the wrong goods, right? I got to sell some transportation, by the way. I didn't know how to represent what I should have been, right? So what I had to make, the life that I had to decide into is, maybe I'm going to make the decision to represent what God would have me be going forward, right? I'm ready to abandon myself and go out and represent God as His agent. And that's what we do. We're all here today as agents representing what God would have us be. Because that is our mission in life. To abandon self and to come in here and to be helpful. That is my only goal. Right? And then the third part of that relationship, the third aspect of that relationship is the father-child. Now it gets a little bit more personal. A father-child relationship, right? So, I failed at providing other people with what they needed, and I failed at providing myself with what I needed, right? So now, I'm going to make the decision that I'm going to trust that God will provide me with what I need. So I grew up with a lot of trust issues, right? But now you're asking me to decide into a relationship of trust. Trusting me on my own power is the very thing that failed. So this is where I make that critical decision. And she talked about the foundation stone. She talked about the cornerstone. But now the third step decision is the keystone. The keystone is this thing that holds the whole arch together. All right? This is what this whole thing is built upon, is this decision that I'm going to decide into. So real quick, I'm going to wrap up with the third step prayer. Okay? And the third step prayer is not the decision, but it's an affirmation of the decision that I'm making here in step three. And so if you guys would, please repeat after me as I say this prayer. Many of us said to our makers, we understood Him. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me, and to do with me as I will.
And to do with me as I will.
Relieve me of the bondage of self.
Relieve me of the bondage of self.
So that I may better do Thy will.
That I may better do Thy will.
Take away my difficulties.
Take away my difficulties.
That victory over them.
That victory over them.
May bear witness.
May bear witness.
To those I would help.
To those I would help.
Of thy power.
Of thy power.
Thy love.
Thy love.
And thy way of life.
And thy way of life.
May I do thy will always.
May I do thy will always.
So thy power is at the foundation of the triangle, which represents the 12 steps. Thy love is what I find in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous as I come in. Thy way of life is what I find on the service side of the triangle in taking my awakened spirit out to be of service to God and to his fellows as his agent, as his actor, and as his child. Right? There's so many promises. Now, the decision that I'm going to be making here, though, is a huge decision. When they tell you don't make any major decisions in your first year, right? You guys hear that?
Yeah.
Well, this is the biggest decision you're ever going to make. So I hope you don't take more in a year than to make the third step decision. Okay? This is critical. This is the thing that holds the whole thing together. But the way that you know you're going to make this decision is what you're doing in steps 4 through 9. In steps 10, 11, and 12. Okay? Because that'll really confirm the decision that you made. So that's all I got.
All right. Thank you.
So you guys, we're going to break for a 25-minute lunch.